Hello, you're listening to Food for Me and You. I'm your host, Catherine Fumier. This week, as always, I take you down to the St. Paul Farmers Market. St. Paul Farmers Market has been serving our community for over 150 years. You get a variety of farmers, producers, and growers, all of which I try to go and have a chat with. This week, I had the pleasure of talking to the kettle corn guys, Greg and Guy. They've been at the farmers market for 11 years. Also, I talked to the herb man, who is selling his garlic. If you are a garlic person, it is actually one of the easiest things to grow, but it needs to get in the ground in the next couple weeks. So we talked to the herb man about garlic. So let's head down to the market, and when we get back, I'll give you a recipe for a few of the tasty, tasty things that I see down in the market. All right, here we go. Hello, this is Catherine down in the St. Paul Farmers Market. It is chilly today, and I've been told by my farmers market friends that I'm not dressed appropriately, which is true. I keep hoping it'll be warmer, but hope doesn't change the weather. So the market kind of feels like it's winding down, which is not necessarily true, but on a day like today when it's a little bit cold, there's just not quite as many people here. But the variety of produce and products is still super high. It's still super, super squash season. That's just what it is. But I have to say that the 10th Street Market is here. I don't know if you remember that episode, but they use high tunnels. So they're able to harvest a large amount of the year. And they will have fresh greens, including kale, beet greens, pea shoots, and lettuces, all the way through December. I just talked to them, and they're planning on being here during the winter market. There won't just be cheese and meat and bread. You can still get greens, which I am so excited for. So I'm on a hunt for garlic for my mom. I got that done. I'm going to buy a whole bunch of different kinds of squash, because it's squashy, squash, squash season. I still see bok choy and mustard greens. I love, love sauteing those. Curry and a little bit of coconut milk. Well, and that'll do it from the St. Paul Farmers Market. Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Gregory.
Greg, and you're here with your twin brother.
Guy.
Guy. Uh-huh. And you do kettle corn.
Exactly.
How long have you been doing kettle corn?
This is our 11th year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And has it been all 11 years in the farmer's market?
Yes, St. Paul Farmer's Market, the different neighborhood markets and the downtown one here, yeah.
So what inspired you to get into kettle corn?
Actually, our brother-in-law is from California, and he said they wait in line out there for it, and we didn't even know what it was. So we looked into it, and that was the reason. We were thinking about a coffee shop, but this is more our style. We love being outdoors.
Yeah. And so you get to control your own time, and you can choose what markets you go to?
Yeah, pretty much what markets we can. As far as time, there are set times at the market, so we have to be there on time,
sure.
Of course, and when it's over. But
that's good.
Right, and now we're semi-retired, so we're just doing Sundays here and one other neighborhood market once a month, yeah.
Okay.
So we're kind of coming to the end of, so hopefully we can find somebody to take it when we...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it that distinguishes kettle corn from...
Regular popcorn?
Exactly.
We cook with soybean oil, and then we put sugar in with the popper and the popcorn and stir that up so it caramelizes it. And then we add salt to it when it comes out and it's still warm.
Okay.
So it's a salty sweet. And we use a little vanilla in there.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
And you were saying before we started talking in Wisconsin?
Right.
How much do you go through, like, in a busy week?
Well,
how many
we
pounds?
Used to go through, what was it, guys? A 1,000 pounds a month, but now that we're only doing one day a week, we're not going near through that. So buckets are half bags, so three full bags, 50
wow.
pounds. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And have you had the same cooker
right.
the whole?
Exactly.
Did
yeah.
you were you able to buy it as is, or did you modify it yourself?
No,
as you
we bought it as is.
Okay.
Yeah. We just modified a few things, like we made that scoop holder, and then the paddle we made because it doesn't come with that easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So and
we do our own bags.
Okay. And what are the different sizes that people can buy?
They can buy 2, 4, and 6, and then
okay.
we sell 2 of the mediums for $7, and 2 of the big ones for $10. So.
Okay.
It's a good deal. It's the cheapest in town.
I always like to ask people what their favorite thing is about the market, about the St. Paul Farmers Market.
People, kids. We love to see kids come up to our counter and want popcorn.
Yes.
That's our favorite
part. They
get
really excited.
Yeah.
I either see them with bags of popcorn or a donut, and they're content as can be.
That's right. Lots of sweets.
Exactly. It's important.
That's definitely our favorite part as a kid.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we're done at the end of October, so we go May through October.
So people can still find you for a little bit longer
if
they come down to the Sunday market.
Right, yeah.
Excellent. And are you usually parked here, or do you switch locations?
They switch us around all
just
the time.
Just follow your nose, because it fills the whole market with that beautiful smell.
Yeah, it is a
all
good
right.
smell.
Well, come down and get some kettle corn at the St. Paul Farmers Market. Hello.
Good morning.
What's your name?
My name is Jeff Adelman, the Herb Man.
The Herb Man.
Yeah.
I talked about you in an earlier podcast because you're one of the only people here who does the dried spices that people can buy.
I've raised over 3,000 different varieties of herb plants over the course of my time here.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm kind of working alone, so I don't have as much variety as I used to have.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I keep trying to make sure I handle every end of the spectrum.
Wow. Okay, so do you have a farm, greenhouses, both?
I live in Farmington, Minnesota.
Okay.
I have a 30-acre farm. There's 10 greenhouses. I think I have 7 of them currently covered this year. That's what I work out of.
Okay. Wow.
Well, it keeps me occupied.
I
heat with wood in the wintertime, and then I run through the vegetables all summer long.
Oh, excellent.
And now it's garlic season.
Yes. Okay, so garlic, this is the time of year to plant it, right?
October 15th or later.
Okay.
I've also talked to people that have taken out the power drill and planted through frozen ground. If you don't plant it this year, you won't have it. It won't last long enough to plant for next spring.
So why is it that it needs to be planted now?
Garlic needs a cold period of time to differentiate from a single clove into a bulb.
Okay.
And it's my understanding that as garlic is grown in other warmer climates, it's got to be refrigerated to initiate that growing part.
Oh. So this weather is perfect where it can get in there, get cold.
Well, garlic is native to the northern climate anyway. It goes dormant in from the Caucasus Mountains. It goes through a hot, dry summer and a cold, cold, wet winter. It grows in the morning, like other alliums, by the 21st of June.
Okay.
And then it begins to go dormant, and that's the response to draws all the nutrients out of the stem in response to the desert weather conditions.
Oh, okay.
So the conditions aren't possible for it to grow in the summertime, so it just quits.
Okay. So if you plant now, when would you expect to have garlic?
Garlic is typically harvested and growing on the 21st of June.
Okay.
Sometime between the 2nd and 4th week in July is when I typically harvest mine.
Okay.
The individual varieties will all tell you when they're ready. They begin to go dormant. They draw nutrients in and begin to dry up. When the plant is about one-third to one-half dry, they should be lifted from the ground and the entire plant hung up to dry.
Okay. And you can see that. I mean, it's
very obvious.
Okay. Because so my mother wants to do garlic this year, and so I'm in charge of figuring this out.
Okay.
Mom.
Welcome to the club.
Yes. So what varieties of garlic do you choose to grow?
I currently have 70 different varieties on the farm.
Holy cow.
I used to be a lot more ambitious. One year I planted 178 varieties of garlic I had in my inventory at that time.
I had no idea there were so many varieties.
Oh, yeah. Seed Savers Exchange maintains well over 300, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And I think there's more than that out there. A lot of them you're going to find there's duplication in the names, but you can't. Genome testing has been done in University of Wisconsin. I believe there's only really 9 groups of garlic. Seven or nine. I can't remember the exact number right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 178 that I had. Definition of insanity. Guy with a blaze orange t-shirt and a potato fork in the middle of 140,000 garlic.
Picking them all up one by one?
Digging them all out of the ground. They're not picked up. They're dug out by hand because they're dormant. They're going dormant. They're still alive. The roots are attached to the ground.
Okay.
So they have to be dug so they don't get... You have to break up the soil so you can lift them.
Ah.
And then every group of plants has to be bundled up so you don't mix the varieties up.
Right.
It didn't happen. I went from 107 where I've been at for a while here.
It's
just like 18,000. I can do 14,000 to 18,000 cloves a year, depending on if I get help with the popular ones.
Okay. And so what are people going to notice about this kind of garlic, like real garlic, as opposed to the stuff they buy in the grocery store?
I liken it to going to the liquor store. If you want to buy a bottle of wine, you don't take the first one on the shelf. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be offering, if you want Pinot Noir, you get Pinot Noir. You don't get Lambrusco. Okay? Once you know the name, you know what to expect when you open that bottle. Garlics are all different. They come from different areas and climates, and just like heirloom tomatoes or other vegetables, they're selected for a trait. I typically, when I'm talking to people about growing garlic, I'll talk about four different categories. Fresh eating, where you're going to be taking things like putting it on salads or toast or pesto, bruschettas, those kind of things where there's no cooking or very little.
Okay.
There's Enchilium Red is a soft neck garlic that comes from Washington, the Enchilium Reservation, right above the Dalles Dam, I believe. But it's an Indian reservation and was just like other things, it's discovered, propagated that way. But it's got like a black pepper aftertaste. It's not, that's as hot as it gets.
Okay.
For long cooking, there's a garlic that comes from the Lors family out of California called Lors Italian. People that are familiar with garlic are going to notice in Italian restaurants you see braids of garlic.
Mm-hmm.
It will have a distinctive yellowish-brown tinge to it. That would be what you're looking at. There's one very similar if it's not that one. It's family, and they have a variety name, I don't know.
Okay.
So that's the provenance. Russian garlics, generally, and because garlic is native to that area, and Russia has a long history of using a lot of being fond of garlic as a medicine and as a flavor. But they typically tend to be hot and spicy to the point where you take a bite of them fresh. Okay. However,
and you'll be the best date ever.
Everybody likes you then. Everybody at least knows what you're doing. But Russian cooking is my understanding that they primarily will macerate the garlic at the end of the recipe and add it right at the tail end.
Okay.
Anything longer than half an hour or so, the flavor, we'll say 15 minutes, half hour, period of time, as opposed to being blended like the Lord's, like the Italian variety will.
So that's meant for cooking for long periods of time as opposed to the Russian.
Lord's, yeah,
okay.
The Lord's would be, I liken to like marinara sauce. If you're going to, if you want to blend it, if you want to simmer it in your food for a long time, you want the flavors to blend. It's not real hot and spicy, but it does last for a long time, and the flavor holds up when you cook it. Russian types cook away. Spicy, the hotter garlic is fresh, the sweeter it is roasted.
Oh.
And then from that point on, then you can select porcelains or marbled purple stripes or other varieties. Porcelain types have very few cloves. There'll be 4 to 6 cloves in them. Nice white wrappers. They're wonderful for roasting because they're so large. You can spoon them right out.
Oh, nice big fat cloves.
That's
perfect. Oh, and that's so nice because you're out of their pod, right? When you...
Yeah, you can just take a spoon and lift them up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go have some when I go home. I love roasted garlic. It's one of my favorite ways to have it. It's when it gets all caramelized and happy.
Yes.
If I was going to do... So I'm going to bring home some for my mom. What variety... What would you recommend?
Okay, well, what I sell my garlics for is primarily for people. Now, there's been a problem in Minnesota this year with garlic. They're all small.
Oh.
Because we had 6 inches of rain. My observation is that we had 6 inches of rain in the middle of May. And then large quantities every couple of days after that. And we had a very early season. The garlic came up out of the ground in March. So we had large plants. And then the roots could not maintain that. They started to drown for lack. And they couldn't support a plant that size, so they'd be all turned yellow. So essentially, all the garlic was done growing in May this year, as opposed to wait until June to finish it up.
Okay. So they're stunted, essentially. Yeah. Or just, didn't have time.
I haven't thought about using that particular word, but yeah, I guess that's what it turns into.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I'm going to end this interview, and we're going to, Mom, I'm going to pick you. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
All right. Thank you so much to the Kettle Corn guys for the interview and for the lovely bag of popcorn that they graced me with. It is delicious. Big hit at the football party. Also, thank you to the Herb Man. I ended up getting my mother a Siberian... I ended up getting my mother a Siberian form of garlic. I can't wait to give it to her. I have all the instructions now for how to bury it and what to do. And hopefully in the spring, my mother will have a beautiful garlic. She's never done it before. I can tell she's excited. I'm excited too. This week on What's the Big Deal, we're talking about Brussels sprouts. Big stocks of Brussels sprouts have arrived in the market. I think it's a fascinating plant. You can see the little nubbins of Brussels sprouts on each of the branches. Brussels sprouts can be had raw or cooked. I particularly enjoy them roasted. Brussels sprouts are in the same category as cabbage, collard greens, broccoli, kale, and kohlrabi. They are super high in vitamin A, vitamin C, folic acid, and dietary fiber. Everyone needs a good amount of fiber, especially men folk, because it helps clean your blood. I don't know if you knew that. We've been growing Brussels sprouts here in the United States since the 18th century. French settlers brought them over. Jefferson even grew them at Monticello. In Minnesota, we say Monticello. Is that right? I don't even know. It says here on Wikipedia that Brussels sprouts contain sulforaphane, a chemical believed to have potent anti-cancer properties. Even though boiling reduces the level of anti-cancer compounds, if you steam, microwave, or stir-fry, it keeps all of those lovely anti-cancer. So what do you do with a Brussels sprout? I prefer to have them whole. I toss them in a little bit of olive oil, put them in a pan, and roast them at like 375 until the outsides start to get kind of brown and roasty colored. I like roasting a lot of my vegetables in the fall, mostly because I can put them in the oven and go about doing other things. There used to be a really kick butt carbonara recipe that we used to do with the bacon and the eggs and Brussels sprouts on pasta. Holy cow, so good. Brussels sprouts, that's this week's What's the Big Deal. Wow, well, I guess that's going to do it for this episode of Food for Me and You. We are now on iTunes. Yes, you can get a free subscription there. I have all of the episodes uploaded there, and we'll continue to do that every week with my new episodes. I'm hoping to go right through the fall. I am honored to do this podcast. It has been something that I've talked about for several years because I'm a big food dork, and I love NPR, and I love food shows. It's a pleasure to do. I'm actually still a big chicken every time I go to the market. I don't know who I'm going to talk to, and sometimes I get nervous. Big thanks to Officer Yee, and big thanks to my friends down at the farmers market. I love seeing them every week, and it's a pleasure to go back and visit them. All right, I'm done rambling. I will talk to you next week. If you have any questions, go on my Facebook page, go on my Tumblr page, and I can answer questions about how to cook all these yummy fall treats that we like. All right? Okay. Theme music is brought to you by Brian Lentz. He can be found at brianwritesmusic@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week. Adios. I am happy. And the people at Bar 5 are letting me stand next to their heater, which is amazing.